Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Biden administration has made a disaster declaration for Wayne and Washtenaw counties in the wake of heavy rains and flooding, which continues today. Michigan is not new to summer rains, even spurts of heavy rain, but the sustained pressure of these kinds of showers over the past several years is putting real strains on our infrastructure and leading to some questions about what upgrades might be needed to survive the change in our climate. Nick Leonard is executive director of the Great Lakes Environmental Law Center. He's here with us now to talk about this. Nick, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So what does the disaster declaration mean for people living in these counties and with the officials that are dealing with the lingering cleanup from the flooding?
So the disaster declaration basically means that there will be more resources coming to communities to help with all sorts of things. Mostly it relates to responses to the flooding. So cleanups, you know, helping people get back on their feet, that sort of thing.
What legal recourse do people have who might be running into dead ends as they search for help right now, either with their insurance companies, and we've heard a lot of stories, or asking FEMA for some assistance?
Yeah, so the legal recourse here is really tricky, and it's a problem, and it's one that's been around for a bit. So basically, if somebody wants to pursue legal recourse against an operator of a wastewater treatment system or a sewage system or, you know, somebody like that, they have to jump through a lot of legal hoops in order to do that. So they have to first file a claim with their local sewage system. And then once they file that claim, you know, they have to make sure that they're doing it in the proper way with all the proper documentation. And they have to do that within 45 days of the flooding event. If they don't, then they're basically out of luck. They can't have their day in court. And so it's really important that people submit their claims, that people gather all the paperwork that they need, and that they do it in a timely way.
Nick, I wanted to ask you about something that's happening in Grosse Pointe. There's a group of residents that have filed suit against the city saying that officials were very much aware of the risks that flooding posed to infrastructure. Have you had a look at this case? Do you think they have a viable claim?
I haven't taken a hard look at it, but, you know, I think the case is certainly stronger now than it was actually 7 years ago in 2014 when we had a similar event in the same area. And so, you know, at this point, I think it's hard for our water and sewage operators to say, like, hey, you know, this was an exceptional event. We didn't know this was coming. We didn't know that this was going to be a problem.
Why do you say that it's a stronger case now than it was 5 years ago?
Well, I think because now we have more evidence that these types of rain events are going to be, you know, more frequent, are going to be more intense, and we have more evidence that, you know, the infrastructure that we have to essentially deal with these events and make sure that people's basements aren't flooded, that we're not polluting our waterways, is insufficient. You know, I think that what came out after this particular rain event was sort of the lack of infrastructure investment in our pumping stations along our freeways and their failure to remove water from our freeways and, as a result, the backup into people's basements. And so I think the more and more that you have these types of events, the less and less are the people responsible for managing this infrastructure are going to be able to say, like, look, there was nothing we can do.
Right. So let's talk about how infrastructure in our region should change. What are some of the top environmental and structural things that you can think of that should be on the agenda to fight flooding?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a couple of things. I think whenever you talk about this topic, you have to talk about both climate change mitigation and climate change adaptation. So mitigation being trying to, you know, reduce greenhouse gas emissions and mitigate sort of future negative effects associated with climate change. And then adaptation being, you know, getting ready for the changes that we're seeing now that we know we're going to see in the future, such as more extreme rain events. And so I think we need both. I think we've been starting to make some very slow progress on climate change mitigation and, you know, developing strategies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. I think where we've really lagged behind is climate change adaptation, particularly here in Michigan. I think in Michigan we've had a sense that, we're going to be immune from some of the more drastic impacts of climate change. We're going to be immune from rising sea levels. We're going to be immune from, you know, really, really extreme, you know, heats that make, you know, our summers totally unbearable. But as we're seeing it, we're not going to be immune from more frequent rainstorm events, and we're not going to be immune from sort of pretty drastic heat waves. But beyond just making investments in our infrastructure, also just sort of reexamining sort of the structures of our communities and making sure that they're resilient to those changes. And so I'll give you a couple of sort of concrete examples. I mean, one is obviously, you know, more investments in our stormwater and sewage infrastructure to make sure that, you know, we're able to pump water off of roadways, to make sure that, you know, we're able to treat all of the stormwater that's going to come with when we get, you know, 7 inches of rain in a very short, you know, 12-hour span. But also, I think beyond that, rethinking, you know, do we want to continue to invest heavily in sort of our freeways and things of that nature, knowing that, you know, they're going to be a risk when it comes to a climate change world. And so just doing beyond just infrastructure investments, thinking about how we can make our communities more resilient beyond just sort of managing more stormwater.
How could we make roadways more suitable for what we need right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways. You can definitely incorporate more green stormwater infrastructure or GSI to try to manage runoff from those roadways to basically try to prevent it from getting into the sewer system in the future. But I think you also have to be looking at, you know, just less roadways. I mean, we have sort of a scheduled expansion of I-94 right now. We can't even handle the water that falls onto I-94 as it currently exists. And so, you know, there's definitely needs to be sort of the infrastructure investment, whether it's sort of hard infrastructure in sort of better pumping stations, more combined sewage overflow basins, stuff like that, or green infrastructure where it's things like bioswales and retention ponds. But I think we're at the point where we also need to start to rethink just sort of our broader projects in terms of, you know, transit development, community development, and think, you know, is this going to be climate resilient, or is this going to be something that, you know, is going to, you know, basically become non-functional due to climate change impacts, you know, periodically in the coming decades?
So what are some alternatives to expanding 94?
I mean, and this is something that we worked on long ago when this project was first proposed, but we said, you know, you should be looking at, you know, rather than expanding 94 to try to address, you know, traffic, increasing traffic volumes and things like that, be looking at, you know, transit options, be looking at improving transit options in the region and looking at improving non-motorized transit options. You know, those are things that I think, you know, are typically, you know, more resilient. I mean, I'm not even sure if the, like, portions of 94 are still closed. And I know, like, you know, I tried traveling the freeway, you know, even a week after the storm, and many portions were still closed. And so, you know, looking to those alternatives to, you know, make sure that our communities are more resilient and, you know, can function in the aftermath of these types of events. I mean, I think one of the big problems was not just after our latest extreme rain event wasn't just, you know, people's basements flooded. I mean, that was obviously catastrophic. But, I mean, essentially the metro area shut down. Like, you couldn't travel. You couldn't get anywhere. And, you know, that's a problem in and of itself.
Right. What do you envision as being the appropriate way to pay for this level of catalytic change?
Well, it obviously has to come, I think, from government spending. I think, and this is obviously a big conversation in the United States right now, is infrastructure spending in what it's going to be. And I think you see a lot of environmental advocates and a lot of environmental justice advocates pushing the message that investment in climate is an investment in infrastructure, and you can't, you know, invest in infrastructure without talking about climate. And I think, you know, this past couple of weeks in Detroit has shown that that's right. You can't sort of think about these things as disconnected. If you are, you know, you're making a mistake and you're not putting the dollars where they're going to be the most effective.
Nick Leonard is the executive director of the Great Lakes Environmental Law Center. Nick, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us on this.
Thanks for having me.